Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on February 11th, 2014, at the Top Hat Lounge in Missoula, Montana. This edition of Tell Us Something features 11 storytellers telling a story based upon the theme, What Are You Waiting For? This week's story comes to us from Joe Stone and is titled, The Time Is Now. Find out more about Joe at meetjoestone.com. Thank you for listening.
So it's August 12th, 2011, one day before the one-year anniversary of my accident. And there I am at the top of Logan Pass. I just hand-cycled, using just my arms. This is one day before the one-year anniversary of becoming a quadriplegic. I know a lot of you are probably looking at me going, how can this guy be a quadriplegic? He's obviously got the use of his arms. But that's a big misconception with quadriplegia. The definition of quadriplegia is that you have impairment in all four limbs. So in my situation, I'm paralyzed from the chest down. I have full function in my arms, but I have no grip in my left hand and about 85% function in my right hand. That's what makes me a quad, impairment in all four limbs. So I'm at the top of Logan Pass, and I had just biked 12 miles of climbing, 2,500 feet of elevation gain. I did it all with my arms, and this was something that I had no idea if it would be possible until I was there in that moment and had just accomplished it. And this is a really big moment in our lives because this wasn't just me meeting one goal. What this did was it opened my mind up to what is really possible in my situation, which I truly believe is limitless. I just have to find a different way to do it. So, fast forward a little bit. Been doing a lot of brainstorming. Been trying to figure out what my next goal is going to be, because once you accomplish one, you can't just stop there. You got to keep going, right? So, trying to figure it out. What's my next goal going to be? It's got to be bigger than this last one. And I'm at a barbecue with a brand new friend who I'm just getting to know. We're outside flipping burgers. And I ask him, Sam, what'd you do today? Oh, I just had a really big day. What do you mean by that? Well, I just went for an 80-mile hand cycle ride, and then I got into my racing wheelchair, which is the form of running for somebody in a wheelchair, and I pushed it for about 45 minutes. Really? What are you doing? You've got to be training for something, but that's a huge day. It's not just a big day. That's huge. What are you training for? Oh, I'm training for an Ironman triathlon. It'll be my first one. Right there. There was the first spark. So I went home, started doing a lot of research on Ironman triathlons in the adapted world. And I come to find out that no quadriplegic has ever completed a full Ironman triathlon or even attempted one, as far as I could find. There was the next spark. The fire was starting to get a little bigger now. We almost didn't even need the sparks. That's all it took for me. That the goal was set. I'm going to go attempt an Ironman triathlon. Have no idea how, because I've never done a marathon, I've never done a triathlon, I've surely never done one as large as an Ironman, both able-bodied and disabled. So there's a lot of stuff to figure out. So fast forward about a year, through a lot of research, a lot of time on the computer, and here we are in Missoula, and I'm going to meet another new friend at the James Bar. And I'm a little nervous because I'm going to be sharing my goal of trying to become the first quadriplegic to do this. And I'm meeting a man named Eric, who's an 8-time Ironman finisher. So you can imagine for me, I was a bit intimidated by this man that I'm going to meet. And at this point, I didn't know his size or anything. Little did I know, he gets out of his car and calls my name, and he's like 6'6" and 200 and some pounds and nothing but muscle and just a beast of a man who's done a lot in his life. And I don't know if I'm talking to the right guy, because a little bit of me is intimidated because this guy's accomplished a lot in his life. I'm still new to my situation as a quadriplegic, and I'm going to tell him that I'm going to try to go do something that he's been doing for so long. So I was a little nervous, but then we sat down and we started having a little lunch. And as we go through the whole process of talking about what it would take, he asked me two questions that will always stick with me. The first question, what do you need from me? There were no strings attached. He just wanted to know how he could help. And at that point, we really didn't know the answer because we hadn't even started training. We didn't even figure anything out yet. But I told him, you know, for sure I need help with swimming. And he looks at me again and he says, okay, so what are you waiting for? My plan at this time was to do it 2 years from that point. I said, well, you know, I think I need to do some more training on the hand cycle. I need to, you know, get faster on it and get this gear and that gear and just get my technique better formed and all of that. And he goes, what are you waiting for? He goes, the fire's in you right now. Don't wait 2 years. Let's go for it. Let's shoot for it this year. So the date was set. November 2nd, 2013, Panama City Beach, Florida, was going to be my first attempt at Ironman. So fast forward through an insane amount of training that I didn't know was going to actually take up this much of my life. If any of you are thinking about doing an Ironman and you think that you're going to have a life outside of your Ironman training, you should think about that again because you're really not. But so in the end, 8 months of training, I hand cycled 2,500 miles, climbed just shy of 45,000 feet in elevation, hundreds of miles in my racing chair, countless laps swimming, and here we are, November 2nd, 2013, the start of my first Ironman. And I got to tell you, if you ever want to be nervous, this will set you up for it. I set up the most nerve-wracking way possible, having no experience in any of this. I'm surrounded by 3,000 other athletes that are all getting ready to do this as able-bodied people. And here I am, a quadriplegic, getting carried down the beach to go start my swim. A little part of me was going, this is kind of strange. If I can't even walk to the edge of the water, how am I going to make this whole Ironman happen? But so to speed things up a little bit, we get me ready and we get into the water. And I actually had to wait. It was a really crazy day of weather and we had big waves. So I had to go out beyond the break of the waves and suspend in the water, just tread water there for 10 minutes until the start of my race started because I couldn't start from the shoreline. And I needed to be deep enough to be able to start swimming, but the waves were right there. So we had to get on the other side of those waves, which normally aren't there. And so I'm out there for 10 minutes and I'm reflecting. Looking at the shoreline, reflecting on these last 3 years, everything I went through, how to relearn how to breathe, how to relearn how to do everything in my life, eating, getting dressed, going to the bathroom, everything you can think of, I had to relearn. Then the cannon goes off. My race is starting, but I got to wait for Eric to get with me because Eric is swimming with me, and the plan is for Eric to help guide me around the course because where I'm paralyzed from, it makes it really challenging for me to get my head out of the water to spot and see where I'm going. So that was Eric's... That was his job. Kind of refer to him as my seeing eye dog. And so we start the race. He gets out there for me. And I figure it's just going to be this moment where he just says, all right, let's go. Let's do this. And he takes a moment. He stops. And he looks at the shoreline. He says, take it all in, Joe. This is what it's all about. And I choke up about saying that. It's not all sadness. This was one of the happiest moments in my life. And I never worked so hard for anything. And to look at that shoreline and see 3,000 other athletes getting ready to run out there and charge into the water, it was an unbelievable feeling. I will never, ever, ever forget that moment. But then we only had about 10 seconds of that, and so we had to actually start swimming. So we start swimming and everything's going great, except what the weather had done is it took away the biggest issue that I was having, which was being able to see. I couldn't spot on my own, so I said, depending on Eric. So there was about 12 to 15 feet of clarity in the water the day before. But now here we are on the day of, and there's only 6 inches of visibility. I can't see Eric. I can't see my hand in front of my face. I can't see anything under the water. We just stripped everything that we had worked on away. But we had to do this. It's the day of. So we're continuing to go. We're swimming. Somehow our energy is keeping us together. We're making our way around. Eventually, because we got a 10-minute head start on everybody else, the rest of the 3,000 people catch up to us. That's a battle in itself. You got people swimming over top of you. You've got people kicking you in the face, goggles coming off. You're basically trying to survive. That's what the whole thing is. And everything's going pretty well. We do our first lap. Everything's going good. Our time is there. And we make the last corner, half mile left to shore, and everything goes downhill. And I started getting, what had happened is I started getting really cold because the weather was so bad, it slowed me down so much that I ended up having 2 hours and 20 minutes in the water versus what we were predicting, an hour and a half. And I started getting early signs of hypothermia. My swimming technique went downhill. I was working harder than I've ever worked at anything in my entire life, but it looked like I was going at a turtle's pace. And then we get close to the shoreline, and that's when Eric taps me. And he says, "It's over." "What? It's over? What are you talking about, Eric?" "It's over. I missed the swim cutoff by 2 minutes. I swam the whole course, but I missed it by 2 minutes. You can imagine this was really devastating for me at that time. Lots of tears. I'm basically bald like a big baby. And it was really hard to deal with. That was a lot of time and effort that went into this. And to only get 2.4 miles into a 140.6 mile day, well, that beat me down a little bit. So I went for a drive with Amy afterwards. We started reflecting on what everything, how it all just went down. And I came to realize one thing. We had a lot going on. This wasn't just an Ironman. This was about a lot more. This was about sharing my story. This was about getting as many people on board as possible. This was about inspiring as many people as possible and starting the Joe Stone Foundation, getting it on the map, which is being set up to provide outdoor adventure for people with disabilities. And so after I thought about all of this and started going through everything, I thought, you know what? Only 5% of this goal was actually crossing the finish line. The other 95%, inspiring other people, pushing myself, learning more about myself than I ever could have, gaining more independence, we were 100% successful on that 95%. So instead of looking at this as a failure, this turned into one of the most successful things I've ever accomplished in my entire life. And so that's where I feel like I need to just leave you guys with the same question that was left for me that day at the James Bar. What are you waiting for? We all have something in our life that we dream about doing, and we come up with every kind of perceived limitation and excuse for us not to make it there. And I think a big thing that people fear is not accomplishing the goal. But I'm going to tell you firsthand that if you set your goal, you do it, and you don't wait around any longer, and you give it 100%, no matter the outcome in the end, the journey is going to be 100% worth the effort that you just put into it. So don't let life slip by. Make it happen now. Thank you.
Your support of live storytelling and local art. Thanks to the bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community. MontanaBookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. FactandFictionBooks.com. Top Hat Lounge, bringing great music to Missoula for over 60 years. The Top Hat now serves food and offers, in addition to great music, comedy shows, performance art, and film. TopHatLounge.com. Haley Faust. Haley Faust is a graphic and media designer based in the heart of the Rocky Mountains. From concept to final design launch, Haley puts her heart and soul into your design project. HaleyFaust.com. Zoo City Apparel. Custom screen printing. ZooCityApparel.BigCartel.com. Rockin' Rudy's, your source for the best music, gifts, and more. Great music, great people, RockinRudy's.com. Podcast production by Nathan Zavalny of Missoula Soundworks, MissoulaSoundworks.com. Thank you to everyone who attends the events, those of you who download the podcast, and especially to the storytellers Jeff Peepos, Gabby Grant, Joe Stone, Pat Williams, Jack Rowan, Chris Latray, Acton Douglas, Georges DiGiorgio, Ray Reshow, Luke Morgan Algeyer, and Joshua Slack. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. The next Tell Us Something is scheduled for August 19th at the Top Hat. The theme, Busted. We'll see you then.